The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Waiting for the sun's magnetic field to flip here in the heartland of America. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody, where the dachshund is about to flip. He does that every 11 days.
I thought it was about 11 hours.
Well, it all depends on whether or not I've
Whether it's a mega cycle or not, apparently, yeah. Today is August the 14th of 2013. Welcome, and boy, a lot to talk about since we missed on Monday. I was out and didn't get home until late in the day, so we held off for a day, and I've got my new toy.
I know you do, and first, before we do any news, you need to tell us what you think about Chromie.
Yeah, thanks to Windows 8 bricking my laptop, and thank you, by the way, for those helpful folks who offered helpful suggestions on what to do. But Sharon was very thorough in trying to go into crisis recovery mode.
Rebuilt the BIOS twice.
Yeah, it is well and truly bricked, though. There's nothing else can be done to it. The hardware was fine. This was a Windows 8 issue, and we're convinced of that. And trust me when I say, Sharon's the smartest person I know. If she can't figure it out, it ain't being figured. So we've replaced with a relatively low cost option. You know, I know a couple $100 is not, you know, chump changed, but relatively speaking, this is an inexpensive alternative to a Windows laptop.
Absolutely. You know, sorry about that, people. I know somebody's going, yeah, hurt my ears.
The irony of the Chromebook, of course, and the form factor is very nice. It looks like
a MacBook Air.
Yes, it does. It's not quite as thin, but it's got the same general look. It's got the chiclet type keyboard. The irony of this, of course, is that I just gave that presentation at Pikes Peak about how Google is sucking up all of our information, and it's being shared with the NSA, who's sharing it with the FBI and the CIA and the DEA and the MOUSE, for all I know. But the truth is, if they want to know what we're doing, they know where to find us anyway. And I do use the cloud a lot. I mean, for work, even I use Google Docs and Dropbox and Microsoft SkyDrive, although not so much anymore since Windows 8 went kablooey.
Exactly. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, but I do use the cloud quite a bit for stuff anyway, which is useful because then I can access certain documents that I need from time to time on my phone, on the tablet, or wherever I am, and that can be helpful. So far, so good. The keyboard is almost full size, just like Apple. They take the keyboard almost to the very edge of the frame of the Chromebook. And this is the Samsung, by the way. There are a couple of other types out there. Acer makes a couple of Chromebook models.
Is there an Asus?
Models.
No.
No. Acer makes two. There's a newer one that's got 4 gigs of RAM.
Is that the HP?
HP makes a Chromebook, and Chrome has its own, which is, oddly enough, the most expensive of the bunch. The new HP is a 14-inch model. This is an 11-inch, so it's not all that different from the old ALBook, which was my old G4 PowerBook, which I loved, but time passed it by. I mean, just got to where it didn't have enough RAM or processing power to keep up with websites.
Well, Al's nearly 10 years old.
Yeah, it got to where all we had him doing was providing internet
Wi-Fi
access
for downstairs,
for the television downstairs. Yeah, I can still hear something. anyway, the form factor on this is really nice. The speed, it seems very responsive, plays video. I was able to access the video that you kindly took of our gospel quartet Sunday morning.
You guys rock.
Well,
you do.
At least on that last note anyway, where I hit that
A-flat
full voice. I couldn't do that in high school. Thanks to you. I've got a few more notes there on the end. So, Anyway, so far so good with the Chromebook. We'll keep you posted. But I just think it's kind of funny that after giving the presentation an hour and a half on they're watching everything we do.
Well, that's just the point. I mean, the truth is that you and I spend a lot of time on the internet. Yep. You and I, in some ways, I suppose, because our podcast is on the internet, that's our mission field. I mean, that's how we outreach to people all over the world.
Yep.
So imagine life without it. You wouldn't be hearing this at all if we didn't have the internet.
That is correct.
I would be on shortwave radio, perhaps, doing that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But because of that, we're able to do this. But we also want to make sure that everybody goes into this World Wide Web world with your eyes wide open.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. For instance, I was just telling you about this. And by the way, this is really loud. So it must be that your ears aren't as sensitive as mine. And all this time, you thought, she's deaf. No. You can leave it where it was. But that's why I backed off my microphone, because my ears are so hot. I have hot ears. I was just telling you earlier, before we did this show, started the show, is that there's a hacker who hacked into a Wi-Fi-enabled baby monitor and began screaming invectives at the 2-year-old who was trying to sleep. The parents heard the screaming from the girl's bedroom, went in, and of course discovered what was going on. And that was when they figured out that it had been hacked.
That's bizarre.
Apparently, these Wi-Fi enabled baby monitors come with a default admin password. Admin is the user. Default password. If you know what the default is on the baby monitor and no one's changed it, you can get in.
Yeah. And isn't that twisted that somebody would spend the time and effort to go around looking for a baby monitor that they could hack into?
Yeah.
It's
twisted. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Speaking of stuff happening over the internet, and much of what I talked about in my presentation was related to the National Security Agency, which has been in the news over the last couple of months since the Edward Snowden revelation. And I'll use that word in air quotes, because anyone who's been paying attention since the end of 2005 knows that the NSA has been listening in to everything we do. That's when the whistleblowers came forth and said, you know, they've got this room in San Francisco where they basically have tapped into AT&T's fiber optic cables, and they're basically splitting everything off of that and routing it to NSA servers. Well, that's where the name Operation PRISM came from. Fiber optic is modulated beam of light. They are splitting the light. Operation PRISM. But the NSA isn't going to take this disclosure of its secrets lying down. They figured out the answer to their security problem.
That is?
According to Reuters, the National Security Agency intends to fire 90% of their sysadmins. That'll do it.
That'll fix it.
Yeah, they are going to fire 90% of their system administrators.
I'm assuming they don't need those sysadmins. Otherwise, they would not fire them, unless, of course, they plan on replacing them
with more outside contractors. And the irony of this, of course, is that Edward Snowden was not an NSA employee. He was an employee of Booz Allen Hamilton.
He was a contractor.
Yes. So anyway, oh, man, Washington, D.C., where what actually happens doesn't really matter. It's just what it looks like you're trying to make happen.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But, you know, another story that's along the same line with Google, a story that came out actually yesterday, and so we missed it. Google position paper on email privacy. Google says that the media misrepresented what they said. The story coming out was that they, being Google, had admitted that Gmail users had no expectation of privacy in the content of their emails. Well, Google is saying, hey, that's not what we meant by that statement. The flurry of panic-inducing stories was started by Consumer Watchdog with a piece that quoted a passage from page 19 of Google's motion to dismiss a class action suit brought on by some Gmail users. And this is the passage that was quoted. And I quote, the quote, "Just as a sender of a letter to a business colleague cannot be surprised that the recipient's assistant opens the letter, people who use web-based email today cannot be surprised if their communications are processed by the recipient's ECS provider in the course of delivery. Indeed, a person has no legitimate expectation of privacy in information he voluntarily turns over to third parties."
Mm-hmm. that tracks with the comment that Google's CEO Eric Schmidt made 2009, I think it was, basically said that we have to comply in the wake of 9/11 with government security requests. So anything you don't want anyone to know, you probably shouldn't put on the internet.
All your base are belong to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so. It's not really a new thing. That's exactly what they mean. If you give it, in fact, there are secure email providers that have been so disturbed by the government's attempts to make them give up information about their clients that they're taking a hard look at whether it's worth even continuing to operate. In fact, one called LavaBit just shut down within the last few days altogether. Its service was to provide secure, encrypted email to people who didn't want the government looking at their stuff. And the founder of it took a proactive approach. Before the government came to him and said, you have to give up this information, he just said, nope, I'm just going to shut things down. And he's walking away from it. The big story, we probably ought to touch on this just because it's happening on Israel's borders.
Well, I'm still on tech.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't leave tech yet.
All right. Well,
because there's something I think that you're going to find interesting, given what you mentioned earlier about SkyDrive.
Okay.
Microsoft has now acknowledged that Outlook.com, Messenger, and SkyDrive have indeed suffered major outages.
Huh.
So if you've had trouble logging on to either Outlook, Messenger, or your SkyDrive, it's because Microsoft simply can't keep up with demand. Either that or their code needs reworking.
Uh-huh.
You choose. I'm picking B.
Yeah, and it was also known in the wake of the Snowden revelations that Microsoft sat down with the NSA when they were rolling out Outlook.com to talk with the NSA about how they could build backdoors into the system for the NSA's ease of access.
Well, Microsoft it's going to be tough to see what happens between Google and Microsoft, whether or not they eventually merge into one mega corporation, because at this point, another story out today is that now 43% of web surfing is done via Google Chrome.
Well, that's interesting.
Internet Explorer is gone.
That's a huge jump for Chrome.
And it may be one of the reasons that I'm finding that Chrome is sort of jittery lately.
Mm-hmm. Well, this raises an interesting thing. We've speculated a little bit about this, so we'll throw this out for listeners as well. Google not only controls the search engine market. Last time I checked, which was right before Pikes Peak, so my information was accurate, about two-thirds, almost exactly two-thirds of internet searches are done on Google. In some parts of the world, it's up to 90%. In the UK, 90% of all searches are on Google. That means Bing, Microsoft's search engine, is getting just a small slice of the pie. I think it's like 15%. Ask.com is almost a joke. Whatever happened to InfoSeek? That was my favorite.
That was the one that I used all the time when you and I first met.
I like the little search terms where you could put the plus sign in front of a word that had to be in it and a minus sign in front of a word you did not want in your
search. Exactly.
I
loved it.
InfoSeek was great. But Google controls search engines, internet search, the internet search market, which is huge because Google then essentially defines reality for people when they do an internet search. And I've used this example before. If you've heard this before, forgive me. But if you do a Google search for a plumber in your town and it returns 500 hits, how many hits are you going to actually go through before you decide which one to call? Probably 5 or 10, maybe 15, 20. You're not going to search through the last 100 or 200 plumbers in the search results, which means that as far as your reality is concerned, those guys don't exist.
Right.
Google is using internal algorithms to determine the shape of your reality.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. The search page that I would get, I could put in the same search,
mm-hmm.
and it would be different for me than it is for you.
Right, because Google can look into your history and your location and tailor results that it believes you will want to see. But beyond that now, then this is what I think is really interesting, is we've talked about the massive fail that is Windows 8.
8.1 is coming out in October, though.
Not quite soon enough.
Free download.
Not soon enough to save Big Blue.
No.
Which was my old laptop. We name our computers. So I hope
don't
that's
you?
Not weird. Yeah. I mean, it's normal, right?
Right. Yes. So,
Microsoft is having real issues. There are. That's true. With hardware manufacturers that are openly saying that Windows 8 has been a big failure. Asus, you mentioned earlier, which is a major PC manufacturer, they are dropping their line of Windows RT tablets that they'd been making, leaving Windows, Microsoft actually, as the only manufacturer of Windows RT tablets right now.
And they admit that they have made way too many,
right. Apple, as cool as Apple Tech is, they are losing the edge on hardware to Samsung and other manufacturers of Android devices. And, of course, Android is the operating system, open source operating system, pioneered, developed by Google. So Google is on the ascent where Apple and Microsoft are on the decline.
You know, I can still remember the very night that we were watching Tech TV. And I'm not sure at that point, it may not have even changed the names from what was it before that? ZDTV,
yes.
Anyway, Leo Laporte said, "Hey, I just tried out a brand new search engine and it is the coolest." And so from that point on, you heard him talk about Google during every show that he was on, and he was on about three or four of them at the time. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, he has his own internet channel, so
right.
to speak,
mm-hmm.
and he promotes Squarespace and lots of other places. And I think there's a cool factor to people not necessarily all that young that will identify with Leo Laporte. He's smart when it comes to computers, and if Leo says it's good,
mm-hmm. you can trust it.
You bet.
We actually went when we were in St. Louis to see Leo Laporte and Patrick Norton, his co-host on the mm-hmm. show. They did a personal appearance at a Circuit City?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, at a Circuit City in
just before they all shut down.
Right. Well, sometime before they shut down, but. Gosh, where was it? Kirkwood Crestwood. It was in Crestwood.
Yes.
On Lindbergh. And the line to get in the store just to see Leo and all of these geeks standing there. It's like, oh, gosh, we can't wait.
It was so funny because, truthfully, I remember going to see James Doohan in Lincoln, Nebraska, when he was at the student union.
Uh-huh.
The line was longer to see Leo than it was to see Scotty.
That's really interesting. So, it was pretty funny because, of course, the geek factor was very high in that line,
mm-hmm.
and we were there. And Sharon and I both have lived lives that are a bit out of the mainstream. Both of us have Sharon was a professional vocalist with traveling, bands,
rock band
and, contemporary Christian groups. And
opera.
In the course of my radio career, got to interview and introduce a number of nationally known pop and rock recording acts on stage. So neither one of us
we're not
is really
your typical geeks.
Starstruck.
Oh, that's true.
My point was that neither one of us is really starstruck.
That's
in other words, we don't make a practice of going out to see artists and meet them in person.
No. I've met a lot of artists and well-known people. And
been there, done that.
Don't care.
Yeah. But chance to go and see Leo Laporte was, oh, Leo. So sad.
Oh, I know. How
anyway.
Funny. Well, anyway, that's pretty much my tech news.
I'm glad you brought that up because that reminded me of a story that I'd almost left off the list today. We talked about this earlier. Last week, it was discovered that a number of trash bins in London.
Oh, yes.
Are actually spying on people as they walk past because for whatever reason, these bins have been outfitted with Wi-Fi enabled devices that are tracking the unique media access control addresses or MAC addresses of smartphones as passersby
mm-hmm.
come near the bins. During a one-week period in June, 12 cans, which is just 10% of this particular company, trash company's fleet of bins, tracked more than 4 million devices and allowed marketers for the company to map the footfall, the traffic patterns of the people who owned those phones. They were able to map the footfall of the owners of the phones within a 4-minute walking distance to various stores. Now, this was done down in the shopping districts where people were walking. So imagine, a New York or Chicago downtown street scene, people walking past these trash bins that are everywhere on major city streets, and the trash bins are stalking you.
And then suddenly you hear, psst, buddy.
It's
Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah. It is technology that is being put out by a company called Orb, or the company's called Renew. The technology is called Orb. And, of course, this is like one or two steps removed from the scene in Minority Report when Tom Cruise goes into the shopping mall and all of those ads tailored just for him, Mr. Mm-hmm. Johnson, or whatever his name was, are beamed right at him with the sound to skull technology.
Exactly. And not, people around him weren't hearing what he was hearing.
Mm-hmm. So
so I have to ask you again, was Oscar the Grouch in any of those trash cans? Hey, buddy.
So again, the company called Renew, the technology called Orb. The article, which is from ArsTechnica.com, said that there's no indication that Renew is observing anything more than the MAC addresses of the phones that pass by, but there's little stopping anyone else working for his own creepy motives or a government agency from building a similar network, which leads to my next quick story here from gizmag.com that a hacker who gave a presentation at that recent Black Hat hacker conference, that he's come up with a system called Creepy DOL, or Creepy Distributed Object Locator. It's a personal tracking system that allows a user to track, locate, and break into an individual's smartphone. And anyone with the know-how and a few hundred bucks can assemble this device and put it together. So the point of all this being, if any of us thinks that we've got any privacy anymore with our electronic devices, phones, laptops, tablets, we're deceiving ourselves.
Amen to that. So. Did you see the story? By the way, I just found it, and it's a little bit connected. Apparently, Oliver Stone told a Tokyo audience that because of the NSA spying programs, he believes that Obama is, quote, a snake for institutionalizing these illegal spying programs, and we need to turn on him.
I'm not a big fan of Oliver Stone's politics, but at least he's an honest progressive. I mean, progressives who are sincere and honest about what they claim to believe should turn on President Obama.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Because Obama ran on a campaign of eliminating the secrecy and the internal spying of the Bush administration. And as soon as he got into office, he did a 180. And his Justice Department actually won the lawsuit filed by the Electronic Frontiers Foundation. The EFF went after AT&T over the NSA spying thing. Mm-hmm. So, just one of many things that the president promised that that has not come to pass, shall we say. The big story, at least in terms of geopolitics going on, of course, is the Egyptian military's crackdown on the pro-mercy demonstrators in Cairo. At last check, just before we began recording this on the afternoon of August the 14th, the death toll had been raised by the Egyptian government to 278. That's today.
That went up very quickly because I saw a story that just as a few hours old saying that 93 had been killed.
Right.
And 93 is a bad number, but 278, is that what you said?
278, and that was as of 5 o'clock Central Time. So, apparently crackdown means shoot to kill.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's not a coup. The military is going out and shooting protesters in Cairo, but it's not a coup, according to the United States government. Because if it is,
because then we'd have to cut off aid.
We'd have to cut off aid. Yeah, we couldn't sell the military hardware anymore. So, however, we are willing to continue purchasing military hardware from the government of Russia for use in Afghanistan. Oh, the same company that it's owned by the government of Russia, the same company that is supplying arms to Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, who we want to overthrow. Wait a minute. What? I know. It's like...
It's a small world after all.
Yeah. It's how are these things all connected? How does this make any sense? Apparently, in the warm afterglow of President Obama's first meetings with President Medvedev, that everything was cool. We decided to buy we placed an order for $1.1 billion of Russian helicopters for the government in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I remember that.
So this was in 2010. Now, the contract, even though Russia is now, according to the president, you know, harboring a guy who's borderline traitor, Edward Snowden, we're still sending them the money for the helicopters to go to Afghanistan.
Do you feel like this is an old shoe kind of thing, that it was all orchestrated? That Snowden was either set up or he is acting out a part?
Could be.
That was scripted for him?
Well, sure, sure.
He may be doing it unwittingly. I have no idea. But makes one wonder.
Yeah.
Well, here's a bad story. Doctors Without Borders, which is originally was a French organization, which has been doing incredible work in Africa for many, many years, has chosen to pull out of Somalia. It's simply too dangerous for their doctors there. They've done hundreds of thousands of operations, most of them for free. They go into whenever there's an event that happens that is dangerous, a coup or a disaster. Doctors Without Borders is very often the first ones on the scene. So they're not. And honestly, I'm not really sure if they are a. What's dinging in here? It's your phone.
Yeah, I know. I turned it off and then I made the mistake of plugging it in.
It's getting upset over there. Hey, what are you playing with over there? That's not a Mac.
That's.
Put that Chromebook down. Anyway, Doctors Without Borders, as I said, is pulling out of Somalia. It's just a shame because the people who are going to lose are the people of Somalia. It's the government and the war, the way that they are just being hunted down, these doctors. And you know, I know that in some African countries that doctors who come into the areas are considered part of GMOs.
Right.
Not GMOs, but NGOs or GMOs.
They could. They eat GMO food.
They do. But also that they tend to want to come in and vaccinate people. And I think that there's a fear that, and I'm not great on vaccinations. I'm not sure that they're ever necessary, but many of them are not. I don't believe. And if they are being tested in African nations, which sadly is often what happens, I don't know if Doctors Without Borders is part of that. I don't. But I just think it's a tragedy. I mean, imagine if the only doctor we had was a doctor from that organization, and they said, I'm sorry, it's too dangerous here, we have to leave.
Yeah.
And we had sick children. And
That is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
It's why Jesus said 2,000 years ago that the poor you will always have with you. Not because, you know, he didn't think that we humans were able to, you know, it wasn't because of a distribution problem. It was because there were always strong men who will take advantage of the weak.
Exactly.
Yeah, he knew the human heart, and that was the
problem. As long as sin exists.
Yeah. Well, let me balance that with a good story.
Please do.
We didn't talk about this when it came out, and then, of course, we've been out and missed on Monday. There was a car accident in Missouri on Sunday. And multiple witness accounts now, including the police and the local fire chief who were on the scene of this accident, are still trying to figure out exactly what happened because they saw what happened, but they can't explain it. This is the case, and our listeners may already be aware of this because I know it's been posted to Facebook a number of times. It involves the appearance and disappearance of what the news media is calling the angel priest. Witnesses say the angel priest, and these words are in air quotes, and I'm taking this from the article directly, appeared at the scene of a Missouri car accident Sunday, anointed and prayed with a teenage victim, and then vanished without a trace. Kansas City television station Fox News said Tucson-based artist Randall Sands has created a sketch of this angel priest using online face sketch software based on media reports, hoping someone would be able to identify the cleric. Officials are still scratching their heads over the priest, who they say appeared out of nowhere. Perhaps more mysteriously, the local fire chief said he does not appear in any of the 80 photos from the accident scene. Jeremiah C. of the New London, Missouri Fire Department told ABC News, "I think that this time I've actually witnessed a guardian angel at work."
Well, let me just back that up. Here's why I'm shaking my head. Because I just saw an article either today or yesterday that Father Patrick Dowling has come forward and said he was the one who appeared at the car accident.
Okay.
This gentleman right here.
And it does sort of match the description. Okay. Well, I'm glad they identified him. The thing that was so odd about this story was that this gentleman appeared on the scene, even though officials had blocked the highway and no one was being allowed access to it. It was a terrible head-on collision with a teenage victim who was trapped inside her car, and they were trying to cut away the structure of the car to get to her, and the tools, blades had become dull. They weren't making any progress. They didn't know what to do, and suddenly Father Dowell shows up with oil. He anoints the young lady and the other people on the scene, the rescue workers, and prays with them. Just then, another fire agency shows up with new equipment. They were able to complete the rescue, and when they turned to find Father Dowling, is it Dowling or Dowell?
It's Dowling, and I guess if what you're saying, that he did not appear in any pictures taken at the event.
80 photos were
taken.
Why
would he not remain there? That's my big question. If this is a real, and I assume it is, because the story is at Huffington Post, but the HuffPost story is actually based on one that was at the National Catholic Register, where it explains that this is the gentleman who actually was there. But I can't figure out why he didn't stay.
Yeah, well, don't know. The fire department, which showed up from Hannibal, Missouri, freed the teenage victim of the accident. And after getting her in the AeroVac helicopter, rescue workers said that the priest was nowhere to be found. So, the fire chief said 80 photos were taken by his department, and the priest did not appear in any one of the 80 photographs, which is why this became a mystery. So.
Well, here's what the CNA says. It says, after emergency responders spent an hour trying to remove a young woman from her wrecked car near Center, Missouri, a priest appeared with anointing oil and prayed with her. He then vanished. He came up. This is what Raymond Reed, who was an eyewitness, said. He came up and approached the patient and offered a prayer. Once the victim was removed from the car, the emergency responders wanted to thank the priest, but he had disappeared. Along the way, the identity is... Sorry, I'm reading. Trying to figure out... The original article that was quoted at HuffPo does not name Patrick Dowling as the priest. That's why I was reading ahead. Sorry about that. Trying to figure out where HuffPo got the information that this was the name of the priest. He's come forward as the angel priest. Dowling has acknowledged that he was the priest who anointed and prayed with Katie Lentz at the scene of the accident. Story's been fascinating. The book goes on to talk about the story. When asked last Thursday, here's why I'm a little suspicious. When asked last Thursday by the Huffington Post to explain the angel priest, Father James Martin predicted that a priest of flesh and blood would come forward. Most likely the priest will be identified and people will be able to thank him. So am I just really suspicious here? I mean, it isn't that I am longing for a story with an angel that appeared as a priest. It isn't that. It's just a little suspicious that a Catholic priest named James Martin says, yes, indeed, someone will come forward to say, I was the priest. And sure enough, but the only story I can find of this is it only at HuffPo?
I'm seeing it also at...
Are they all quoting the Huffington? Well, anyway, it's a curious story, and someone sent me an email, actually, and asked me, why on earth would an angel appear as a priest? And there are a couple of answers for that. One is that there was no angel there. that and there was
which
no flesh
and
blood
yep.
person there yep. because when you are in dire stress, sometimes your brain can do funny things. Another example is that it was an angel, and the angel simply took the appearance that the woman expected to see.
That's possible too.
And that often happens. There have been a number of times, and I said this in my response, that I have seen angels mm-hmm. a couple of times that I'm just sure were angels because they just plain disappeared mm-hmm. or approached me in a warning kind of capacity. One of them was a truck driver, and he appeared as a truck driver because that's what, you know, that it was a truck driver that came over. But then he disappeared.
Hmm.
Another time was, Sam says, no more time for this, Mom. You have to wrap it up because you guys are taking too long, and I want fed.
Yeah, you're at 35 minutes now.
Well, enough with that story.
But, we'll just point out again that it wasn't just the priest was seen by a number of people there. It's just for whatever reason, he came and went while they were...
This just strikes me as so strange. Why not stay and, you know, and see the woman to the ambulance and I don't know. Yeah. Seems odd.
Well, he's diving under the binky again. So, okay, if you're going to keep talking, I'm going back to bed. Sun's magnetic field is indeed about to flip, according to experts. NASA-supported observatories are saying that it looks like we're no more than 3 to 4 months away, which, as you mentioned earlier, is...
Well, he did flip. In fact, his head was the other direction. So
that's
Sam
true.
Has now flipped, by the way.
Yeah, every 11 minutes is his cycle. The sun does it every 11 years. So we're near a solar maximum.
And is it's nothing to be afraid of.
That's this exactly is, right. No. And that's the point. This happens every 11 years. Yeah. So if you start seeing posts on the internet in all caps with multiple exclamation points,
right.
Just remember, this happens every 11 years or thereabouts.
And we are at solar maximum. In fact, solar maximum, I think, was supposed to actually start in December, so it's just about over,
mm-hmm.
and which solar maximum is just the midpoint in the 11-year cycle, and that's when the sunspots and all of those things are at their worst, so probably the sun's going to get really quiet now.
Mm-hmm. So nothing to worry about.
Go underneath his binky.
Yeah, yeah. The sun is going underneath its binky, and that's a good thing.
Actually, that doesn't sound like a good thing at all.
Yeah.
Ah! Yeah. There's this quilted thing up in the sky.
Well, I got a couple more interviews to post from the Prophecy Summit at Pikes Peak this week at A View from the Bunker. Had meant to get one up last night and got, I don't know, last night was Barbershop Quartet practice night. That was
of course
problem.
It was.
Yeah. But I will have one posted this evening as well. I'm actually going to post the interview with Bill Koenig, who is... keeps an eye on what happens in Washington, D.C. and the prophetic implications of things that we see in the news. Before Friday night, I will also have an interview with Paul McGuire, sort of a Newsweek theme on View from the Bunker. The interview is done at Pikes Peak. Paul is a radio announcer. He does some work as an analyst for news networks and very interesting discussion with Paul. We found that we had a lot of thoughts in common about the way the world works. So both of those interviews should be very informative, I think. And there will be more to come. We're something like 20 or 22 interviews over the course of the 2.5 days.
You were busy.
Yeah, but it was a great time to pick the brains of people a lot smarter than me. So I enjoyed it, and we'll be spinning those out over the next few months as the DVDs are in production now from the conference at Pikes Peak.
Wonderful. So if you have not yet ordered your collection, you get it in.
Yeah. And we'll be back Friday, God willing. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.